listening to my fans and them. Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
You're listening to ESPN 1000, the ESPN app, Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. So glad that you're with me. Hit me up on Twitter at twitter.com, tweet J Hood. Also on Instagram, IG J Hood. There is a poll question for you on Instagram. Go there now. My Insta story, IG J Hood. We'll tell you about that poll question a little bit later on. We'll have Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between coming up at 8:35. Nick Friedell covers the NBA. For ESPN.com. We'll talk to Nick coming up in 1 hour from now, getting his thoughts as he'll be giving us a call live from Oakland, California, because the Warriors will be taking on the Atlanta Hawks tonight. So we'll get his thoughts on a number of NBA issues, including the Bulls that are 4-10 on the season. All right, speaking of the Bulls, former Bull Elton Brand is a general manager of the Philadelphia 76ers. And he was able to broker a trade with Tom Thibodeau, former Bulls coach and president of basketball operations with the Timberwolves. So it took place today. Sixers GM Elton Brand said the club's trade for Jimmy Butler is not an indication that Philadelphia has lost faith in Markelle Fultz. But here's the deal. Jimmy Butler wanted out really badly. He really wanted out of Minnesota. Did not want to deal with Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins anymore. Just trying to piece it all together. You know, Butler was traded to Minnesota. And I thought that was perfect for Jimmy. Perfect. Perfect meaning that Jimmy Butler will tell you that he loves country music. And I thought that being in the Twin Cities, that's perfect for him. He likes fishing and he likes the according to him, the country life. And there's a little of that in Minnesota. And so he's there and somehow he can't connect. He can't seem to lead that young Timberwolves team. Now, they were able to get to the playoffs because they won against Denver the last regular season game to get into the playoffs. And even though that team was so rich in talent, Jamal Crawford was on that team. Taj Gibson's on that team. We mentioned Wiggins and Towns and Jimmy Butler and Jeff Teague. There's so many good players on that team, but yet they can never get over the hump. So Jimmy got more and more frustrated because he says he looked at Karl-Anthony Towns and Wiggins and didn't think that those guys were winners. And so at the last game of the playoffs for Minnesota, as the Timberwolves flew back to the Twin Cities, Jimmy flew to L.A. on a separate flight. Didn't want to be around the team. And then, late, coming into the season, late, even later than Kyrie Irving asking for a trade, late, Jimmy Butler's like, I don't want to be in Minnesota anymore. And Tom Thibodeau, on bended knee, says, please, don't leave me. On bended knee, begging Jimmy Butler, begging him not to go for this trade. And Jimmy went AWOL. He wasn't around for a while. Then he came through the doors at the practice facility in Minnesota and then challenged Towns and challenged Wiggins with other scrub players on the Minnesota team. And then Jimmy Butler was able to pick and choose when he wanted to play, which is unbelievable to me. Here's why it's unbelievable. If you know anything about Tom Thibodeau, you know Tom Thibodeau's a guy that needs to have his control. He was the guy that when Paxson and Gar would knock on the door of the facility here on the west side, he wouldn't open his door. He had the door closed, trying to do his own thing. Didn't want to have the communication with Paxson and Gar sometimes. And so there was always a disconnect there. And so Thibodeau, who's all about control, all about defense, all about trying to win, and somehow, some way, he let this whole situation slip through his fingers. I mean, he's not just the head coach. He's the president of basketball operations. It's bad for him that he didn't handle this properly. Didn't want to make the trade. And the Glenn Taylor, the owner, was like, no, you're going to make a trade. And the trade now took place. Now, there's two sides of this trade that we'll get into the Philadelphia side of things in just a moment. But Jimmy Butler had his press conference today because now he's with the Sixers. It's a roll of the dice because Jimmy still is a free agent at season's end. But the deal took place anyway. And Jimmy Butler is looking forward to playing with Markelle Fultz.
He's a talented young player. I think that from what I can tell, a lot of things are mental. In this league, I think 90% of it is mental. If you think you can do something, you really can. I know how hard he works because I'm in L.A. and I know that he comes by there and trains. I know some of the people that know him and they tell me how great he wants to be. So, I mean, as long as he's going hard and giving his all that every day, I mean, the guy has my respect. I just want him to go out there, play hard, be who he is, stick to his strengths, and I know he's just going to thrive. He's going to be successful.
He also talks about the reports in which if he's a bad teammate or not.
You really wouldn't know who I am unless you're around me every day. And for the most part, that's why I don't worry too much about what everybody says. If you know me, if you're around me, you know my heart, and you know how I go about what I go about. I love my teammates. I don't think there's too many of them that'll tell you that I'm a bad teammate. But, I mean, people get whatever they want to say out. It is what it is. But I think I'm an incredible human being, teammate, and I'll show that to the guys that are here.
Elton Brand, the general manager of the Sixers.
So I spoke to many of Jimmy's teammates, ex-coaches, management staff. And what I got out of it was what he just alluded to. In the locker room, they loved him. Now, on the court, he's demanding, he wants to win, and I could deal with that. Our organization can deal with that. Our players can deal with that because they want to win. But talk to many of his teammates. It's like, he's great. We loved him in the locker room. On the court, he's demanding, and he wanted to win. He pushed me to be better, is what I was hearing. So it was an easy call for me.
Mm. Jimmy also talks about playing without the ball in his hands because there's a lot of talented players in that Sixers team.
It's different, I won't lie. I think I had the ball a lot whenever I was in Minnesota, but that doesn't mean that I can't play the style of basketball I was played here. That was just what I was asked to do when I was there. I don't think that that's a problem. I think I'm great at sharing the ball, moving without the ball. If I need the ball, I'll go steal it, go to the other end and lay it up. I'll go get an offensive rebound. There's more than one way to get the ball. And I think the way that these guys play, sharing the ball, setting screens, slipping, all of that good stuff, I think that's actually easier than, you know, having to create all the time in an ISO situation or off of a pick and roll.
Thoughts there from Jimmy Butler. So here's the thing. Two sides to this coin, because we're going to hear from Dan Jenkins because he's standing by, because we're going to talk some Bears with him here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. From Philadelphia's standpoint, we talked earlier about how the Bears roll the dice for the future, right? About the present more so than the future. So did Elton Brand. They made a trade with Saric and Covington, are now with Minnesota. Those are two guys that can create their own shot. And Jimmy Butler is a guy that can create his own shot too, but there's not many on the Sixers that can do this. My point is that if Jimmy Butler doesn't sign long-term with the 76ers, then Elton Brand, he didn't necessarily screw the Sixers, but you took away a couple of players that could really be able to stretch the floor and be able to get their own shot. And so that's the problem. Jimmy Butler says all the right things now, but then he said all the right things in Minneapolis too. And so keep in mind that Jimmy Butler is not the same guy that he was coming out of Tumble, Texas, coming out of Marquette, being with the Bulls, drafted by the Bulls. He's a different guy now. He knows what he wants. He wants to be a star. And I think he is a star player. But I don't know what makes him happy. If he cannot get along with the young players of Minnesota, what makes you think he's going to be able to get along with the people in Philadelphia? That's the question. Again, I don't know how this is going to work. But I just find it interesting that he was traded to a team with young players. He just came from a team with other young players. And so that's why the question was broached if he's a bad teammate or not. You know what happened at the end here in Chicago with him and Dwayne Wade being on one side of the floor and the other young players and Rajon Rondo on the other side of the floor. And they kind of separated themselves and they called everybody else out and really didn't point at themselves for the issues with the Bulls team when Wade was here. So I don't know what Jimmy Butler wants. I know he's a talented player, but I think that from Jimmy Butler's standpoint, he needs to, it might be after this season, he needs to lock in on a team and be able to help that team and not worry about the drama and not running to Rachel Nichols every time things don't work your way. How about that? So I don't know what he wants. I know that he wants to be in the spotlight and Hollywood and all that, and that's great. But you know what? He has to be able to just lock in on a team and help a team win. I know he's a solid player, but all the extracurricular drama stuff is not good for anybody. He's got to figure that out. Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We'll talk more to Nick Friedell about this coming up at 9 o'clock. We turn to a friend of the program, former Chicago Bear, and he is the proprietor of the Kool-Aid when it comes to the Bears. It is Dan Jiggetts, and Dan joins me here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Dan, Jonathan Hood, as always, I appreciate your time. How are you, and how's the family?
Unfortunately, though, we lost one of our cats. He got very sick. He's been with us 13 years, so it's kind of tough to lose him, you know.
Yeah,
they become so much a part of your family, man. But you know, life moves on, though.
The cat would be happy with the Bears right now.
Yeah, one of my cats. Whenever I'm writing notes on the games, he comes. And, well, I can always tell when either the game is going very much in the Bears' favor and it's over, or it's a disaster, because he'll come and sit down on my notepad, and I know that. At that point, the game is over.
When Dan has stopped writing, I guess I can sit down on the yellow pad now.
That's it.
Nice, comfortable spot. Well, I tell you, Dan, things are really turning around in a positive way for the Bears. What do you think of the 6-3 mark for the Bears so far this year?
Oh, well, it could be better. You know, it should be better. I'm excited about, obviously, you know, them being 6-3, but I'm always the kind of person that looks at, you know, things and saying, well, you had other opportunities where you really could have shut the door on some teams, and it didn't happen. So, you know, while you're always pleased to see, you know, those kind of numbers, you also realize that, you know, some things could go against you in the second half. So you got to kind of build up a little reserve of victories, if you will, keep stacking them when you have an opportunity. And so, you know, you look at that, though, as a growth process, too, with this team. So, you know, all in all, though, you've got to be pretty doggone pleased with where they are. But, John, back to some of the things that we talked about before, you know, at the end of last year and what they needed to do. And fortunately, you know, Ryan Pace did a nice job. He and his people did a nice job of going out and answering some of the needs that this team had. And that's made a world of difference between last year and this. And also in the fact that you see what they're doing offensively.
I want to ask you about this RPO system, the newest gimmick that's out there for the National Football League offensively, where it's kind of it's the three-point shot of football, I guess you could say, as far as the quick-moving offense. What do you think of the system, and did you have the personnel to run that back in your day?
You know, we probably had the personnel, but, you know, the creativity was the part that was missing. because we had a great running game.
Yeah.
And, you know, with a run-pass option at RPO, It definitely, you know, feeds into the fact that if you've got a great running game, then you could really, you know, put the defense in a little bit of a pickle. It's really similar in many respects to you know, the play action passes, except, you know, you're even more heavily relying on the run game as opposed to, you know, just faking the pass, faking the run and then throwing a pass. Here you have options. It's really a fun thing to watch. And the different formations give the defense, you know, more to think about. I had mentioned last year that one of the things that, you know, I wanted to see offensively is what they were doing in Kansas City. I watched them a couple of times during the course of the season, early in the season, and I loved what they were doing. Why? Because, number one, the pace of the game. You control the pace of the game. You don't allow the defense to dictate to you in terms of timing and how you're moving your offense. The other thing is, you know, with the various different formations, you know, you start to give the defense a little bit of that confusion, and you saw some of that with Detroit over the weekend, where they were arguing about who was supposed to cover whom. And we used to do a lot, even going back to my college days, we had a lot of, we ran a multi-flex offense is what they called it, and we did a lot of motion and things like that. And what that does is it upsets the defense. They can't settle in and get a bead on you, you know, like they can if you just come out in normal formations. So it's creative. It's fun to watch. The one thing that you want to watch, though, as the season goes on and the weather changes, is whether or not you're able to really get that run game cranked up like you have to have it when the weather turns foul.
The owner of the Bears Kool-Aid, Dan Jiggetts, with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. By the way, with this RPO system, Dan, back in the day, you know that Nagy would have had you lined up as a receiver. You would have been receiver eligible in this offense.
No doubt. You know, I played a lot of tight end my first 2 years, you know, so Yeah, I'd have been totally into this thing.
62 is eligible. Well, wait a minute.
I know what the way things have been working out, they might have had me kicking.
Right, exactly. Oh my goodness, he's still with the Bears. That must say a lot about the scrap heap of kickers. I know that there was a day, man, where if there was someone, you were not at work very long as a kicker. If you were cut someplace, you'd be picked up someplace. I can't believe that you don't have the stockpile of kickers just waiting to get on a team.
It's also, you know, it's more than that now, though. The other problem is, you know, it's a financial thing. Well, let's be honest about it. I mean, you know, you sign a guy who comes in with a, you know, pretty good pedigree, and you sign him to, I guess it's $9 million is guaranteed. Mm-hmm. You're not cutting him. You know,
yeah. You
just got to hope that it was, you know, it was a hiccup, and you move on. And a lot of times with kickers, that's the way that it is. You know, I know some people, you know, get upset when you talk about what happened with Mason Crosby from a couple of weeks ago. But, yeah, you know, everybody's thinking, well, Mason Crosby's gone from Green Bay. You saw all those kicks he missed. You can't do that now, you know, because of salary caps and what you have to guarantee to get the guy that you want. You just have to, you know, keep believing in him and send him back out there. And hopefully, that, you know, at the end of the season, you know, he gives you back what he took from you early in the year. But there's two things that have to happen there, though. I think number one and most important, and I can't believe that he didn't do this. Somebody didn't think of it to send him down to Soldier Field to kick during the course of the week. That's something that was going on even back when Bob Thomas was kicking for the Bears. You have to go down there and get an idea of, you know, what it's like to kick in that environment. I heard someone say that he mentioned that, you know, the wind's the same at Halas Hall as it is at Soldier Field. No, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Very different environment. And so you have to go down there and just get, you know, get comfortable with it. It's not to say you have to go down there every week, but at least early in your career, you should be down there, you know, kicking in that environment and just kind of getting the feel for the place. And that's something apparently he did not do. And so hopefully that's something that, you know, Matt Nagy will get on him about and get him down there. I mean, if he has to, Uber.
You know, right.
Get him down there, man, and get him an Uber or a Lyft or whatever and make sure that he gets some opportunities inside the stadium.
Yeah, open up the gate and let him in there, because it doesn't do any good for him to be in Lake Forest. Be in that environment so you can get used to it and the winds and the swirling conditions.
You know, the other thing, too, though, Jonathan, is you look back at special teams, and let's not forget it's a third of the game. And when you look back on the game on Sunday, you know, you saw a couple of different mistakes there on the special teams, the onside kick situations and such. You know, those are the kind of things that, you know, as time goes by, have to be eliminated, along with missing the kicks, obviously. But there were just, like, certain mistakes that players made that you cannot make if you want to be that, you know, that upper-level football team. And those are the kind of things that, you know, yeah, you have young guys out there and all the rest of that, but that's no excuse. They've got to pay attention when they're in meetings and understand the rules of the game and get all that stuff buttoned down. And that means, you know, the special teams coach has got to ride them like they're a bad pony, and make sure that they learn everything that they got to learn. And then it's their responsibility also to make sure that they learn it, because that's their job. So, you know, in that regard, yeah, you got to get all over that stuff, man, because that's a third of the game. Look at all the yardage that's taken up in the kicking game. It's a tremendous amount of yardage. So make sure you know everything and have it buttoned down.
Dan, I guess my fight that I've been having on the air over the last, I guess, 3-4 weeks about Mitch Trubisky is that I think that any good coach is able to accentuate the positives and hide the negatives of any player, including the most important position at the quarterback spot. And so,
left tackle,
I forgot about that. Yes, also, yeah. So you got to protect the blind side, my friend. So I think that you have to also look at this. My thought is, if the bar is Mike Glennon, you've surpassed the bar. And yeah, I just think that anything that you get from Mitch Trubisky is gravy at this point as he learns on the job. How do you see it?
Yeah, you know, it's easy to, as a fan, you get greedy. Because, you know, you see some success and you want that week to week to week. But you understand two things. Number one, you know, he really hadn't started a ton of games when he came in here. He got an opportunity last year to get in there and you know, get his uniform dirty a little bit. you understand that there's a growth process that has to take place, and then start all over with a new offense on top of that, and really learn the nuances of it and get comfortable with it. And that's what you're going to see. You're going to see some variation from week to week with that, and you have to understand that and live with that with a young quarterback. And it's particularly tough when you see Patrick Mahomes doing what he's doing, or Deshaun Watson doing what he's doing down in Houston. But the idea is they're all getting better week to week to week. And now that you put all these different pieces together for Mitchell, that's what you got to expect out of him. You expect him to get better and better and better. And every now and then you're going to have a little bit of a hiccup, as we talked about with the kicking game. But the idea is he's getting better and better. And, you know, and that's what you've got to just look at and focus in on that, because he's certainly now got the weapons that he needs. Now it's a question of getting comfortable with all those weapons and getting comfortable with the offense and just having a total grasp of it. And you see that happening with him all of a sudden. The throws get more accurate. He gets more comfortable. You know, that little bit of a doubt that can be in your mind when you first start out in an offense, you start to see some of that dissipate.
And the line is giving him time, my friend.
Yeah, they are, man. They're protecting him. So that's the other thing. You know, and like I said, the most important thing is his left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, offensively, they are getting good play out of the offensive line. The only thing that again, is going to be a fly in the ointment is if they can't get Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen loose in the run game the way that, you know, you really need to see. And that is, you have to get over, I think, at least 120, 130 yards rushing combined out of those two guys week in and week out.
And, see, that's what I want, too. I think that traditionally you still need that thunder and lightning. If you have two solid backs, that's great. It makes me think, though, Dan, with this RPO system, that Howard's days are numbered, and I don't agree with that. I think that Tariq Cohen is a fine running back for the gadget plays that they like, but I still believe in Howard's ability to run between the tackles, especially as the weather gets worse.
Well, let me tell you something. I don't care what team it is. You better have a load back.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, there was a lot of talk earlier about, you know, whether or not you know, the backs are really all that important now in the game of football. That stuff doesn't change. You still, at some point or another, have to be able to turn around, hand that ball off, and figure that you're going to get 4.5, 5 yards out of your guy. And at the end of the game, he's going to have over 100 yards for you. If you want to play and play deep into the season and play well and get into the postseason, that's a fact. It's going to have to be there. Because what happens a lot of times when teams get pass happy is they end up with a defense that's exhausted by the end of the season. Why? Because, you know, you get three or four three and outs with, you know, some errant passes and that kind of thing, and your defense gets destroyed. The idea with running the football is not only the gain of yards, but also you use the clock to your advantage and not put your defense out there constantly, you know, with their backs up, because you know, they're having to go out and after, you know, three unsuccessful plays in the passing game and go right out there, and there's a minute taken off the clock. So that's another reason why you have to be able to run the football.
Dan Jiggetts with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app with Jonathan Hood. We talk about the Bears that get ready to take on the Vikings. What does it mean to have a difference maker like Khalil Mack on this defense?
Oh, man, it's fun. Mm-hmm. See, you know, he makes everybody else in the rush game that much better, and he makes the secondary that much better. You see the difference now with watching the corners and watching them get up and snuggle up in that coverage and bump those guys to the line of scrimmage. Why? Because they know that the quarterback's not going to have all day to sit back there and pick them apart and some guy running a 40-yard go on them. Khalil Mack and the fellas up front, and Akeem Hicks inside, has been doing an outstanding job. I'm looking for Leonard Floyd to use all of that speed and power finally to get to the quarterback. But keep the pressure in the middle, and that's what Akeem Hicks is so good at. He and Eddie Goldman, same kind of thing. And this Bilal Nichols, the young defensive lineman, I really like this kid. He's out of Delaware, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
He's really coming along really fast on the inside rush. So they've got some guys, and Aaron Lynch is kind of interesting from the outside as well. He's big, tall, and rangy, and can get to the quarterback. And Robertson is also another guy who's at 6'7", is a guy that can put some pressure on from the edge. So I like what they're doing from a rush standpoint, but Khalil Mack is the guy that's really getting it done from a rush perspective, and it's really helping the secondary. And all of a sudden you're seeing guys like Kyle Fuller picking off passes, Prince Amukamara picking off passes. You know, Eddie Jackson is looking great again this year. Adrian Amos, the same thing. So I'm excited about what they're doing defensively. And the thing that goes back to, though, Jonathan, is consistency. You know, when you look at keeping a defensive coordinator and your defensive staff basically in place from what you had going on in the last couple of years, it makes a huge difference. So they didn't have to, you know, try to change everything defensively, offensively at the same time. The defense was ahead of the offense, and it's a great thing now because that means that you give more opportunities to see Mitch Trubisky and the offense go out there and fire it up.
I think Callahan's made himself some money, hasn't he?
Doubt about that.
Yeah, I think he's got a little. He's got a little change coming, Dan.
Yeah, you know, timing is everything. But I call him Inspector Harry Callahan. Yeah, he found the right time to start playing really well.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like last go around when you're looking at Fuller and everybody saying, well, he's in the contract year, and he's, you know, now he plays. Well, you know, he's come back this season and played pretty doggone well too. So. You know, I look at it, sometimes it's just guys starting to, you know, to find their groove and get a real good feeling for what they're trying to do out there. And that's the same thing with a lot of those young guys. And Eddie Jackson came in. Eddie Jackson coming out of Alabama looked like he's a guy that's been playing in the NFL for about 4 or 5 years when he came out of Alabama. Well, you know, that's a pro program down there.
Sure.
So anyway.
I think
he came in, he was vested already as a veteran when he came in.
Sure is, man. I tell you, that program just amazing. Speaking of money, here's what would happen. If you were on the same team as Le'Veon Bell as the players rep, I'm sure that the media would turn to you and ask you your opinion. Anytime that you lose $855,000 per week, that's like being off a week from the old Jiggets and North show. Le'Veon Bell with that holdout, now he's not going to be able to get any money this season. Looks like he's done for the year.
I don't understand it. You know, I understand that, you know, you got to make your point. You know, you want to get, you know, you're trying to look at a long-term deal. That's what he wanted. He wanted, you know, a nice package. But you will never make up the money that you've lost from this year. Because, and you also look at, you know, the age of a guy. And I understand, you know, you somebody will say, well, Frank Gore's been playing since I was. But there's not that many Frank Gores in this world, you know.
Right.
And with Le'Veon, I don't understand what was holding them up in terms of, you know, coming in and getting a deal done with the Steelers. It just doesn't make any sense. And, you know, and yeah, you're right. You know, you miss a year where you're going to be making probably, what, $17 million or whatever. Mm-hmm. You're never going to make that up in a future contract. And I think that when he comes back, he's probably going to end up in a similar kind of situation. So, you know, because the year might be told, which doesn't make any sense at all to do that. You know, you just got to look at the business side of things. You know, they've got something else that I've got to try to get to do. Let's go ahead and play this thing out and then see where we go from there. That doesn't make any sense to me.
$855,000 a week, Dan.
Yeah, $2, man.
Oh, man.
That's Johnson Hood type money right there.
Oh, I wish.
I don't think I can ever turn down that kind of money to play week to week.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
you know, your head checked.
Oh, my goodness. It's amazing. I just can't believe what he's doing there. Okay, well.
As Doug Buffon, I used to joke, he must be pre-concussed.
Right, exactly. That concussed, pre-concussed already. Man, oh man.
I don't understand it at all, man. But, you know, maybe he's got some agent to figure he's going to pull a rabbit out of a hat, but it better be a big rabbit. And he better start pulling it really fast.
Yeah, that's amazing. Do you have any memories of playing the Vikings in Bloomington or in Chicago?
Yeah, you know, I guess the most fun was up in Bloomington because, you know, again, it was one of those things where, you know, we were playing outdoors when I first got to the Bears. We played up at the old, it was Metropolitan Stadium, I think it was called,
mm-hmm.
And we were all on the same sideline. And, you know, and we'd always play them late in the season. And Bud Grant didn't allow heaters for his guys. So that means that if they didn't have heaters, you didn't have heaters. And that place was freezing, man. And that's the one thing I can remember. And I can also remember, I think it was Hans Nielsen was our kicker. We had an opportunity to win the game up there. And we hadn't won up there in years. And he shanked a field goal that hit the scoreboard. It was sort of, the scoreboard was over in the corner. They were using the baseball scoreboard because it was a stadium that the Twins use as well. He hooked it so bad it hit the scoreboard. And we were like, oh, my God, this is a great opportunity to doing well against the Vikings up there at their place. They were always tough, but those were back in the great days for the Vikings, you know, back at the tail end of the Purple People Eaters era of football for the Vikings. And remember going all the way back to Fran Tarkenton and all those guys that were still playing when I first came into the league. So it was always a great rivalry and a lot of fun to play those guys. And Bud Grant and his guys were very smart football players, and you always knew that it came down to that fourth quarter late in the game, they were going to figure out a way to win it. And that's exactly what they did, and that's why they went to four Super Bowls. They didn't win them, but they got there, and that's a hell of an accomplishment.
You know, he's still kicking around, Bud Grant, in Minnesota. He's still in the Twin Cities. He has a garage sale once a year, Dan, and it's in typical of Bud Grant fashion, no haggle, cash only, no haggling on the price. The price, whatever it is he's going to sell, that's what it is. If not, get out. Take a hike.
Yeah, it's like that old saying. You go to the bar, sign up above the bar, says if you're drinking to forget, please pay in advance. That's what Bud wants you to do, pay in advance. But you can usually find him, too, around the Vikings complex. During the course of the week, he'll pop in every now and then. I know when I was calling games back in my CBS days, I'd run into him a lot up there, even when Jerry Burns was the head coach of the Vikings. He'd always be around. So he is a wonderful human being. What a wonderful man he really is. He's a great guy.
Dan, I'm glad you spent some time, and good to catching up with you, and let's talk again soon.
Well, thanks. You know, I understand, too, by the way, the last time I was on with you, I talked about my guys over at GH Fit Labs. They told me they got a heck of a response from your folks, man. I'm here to tell you they're doing some great work with me and Keith Van Horn and Britt Novoselski and the guys. We're getting our bodies right, finally.
Uh-oh. You're making a comeback.
Yeah. The way they're paying these days, I don't know, that $810,000 a week that Le'Veon Bell is missing out on. Even at my broken down age right now, man, I go out there and give it a shot. You know what I'm saying?
Get the cash. If the cash is there, get the cash. Well, I don't blame you.
That's like a week's salary for that was probably about half a season salary for our entire football team. This guy's missing out on a week to week basis.
Oh my goodness, that's just
crazy, man.
I can't believe it. I just can't believe that. Dan, as always, thanks so much for coming on. Have a great holiday.
All right, Jonathan, you do the same and say hello to his family for me. All right.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye bye. Dan Jiggetts with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app as you're listening to Under the Hood.
Jonathan Hood. And I got what it takes to rock the mic right, yeah. On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What do you got there?
This is your car.
My car? I said a 10-second car, not a 10-minute car.
Pop the hood.
Pop the hood?
Pop the hood.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Here we go.
Time for Tales from the Hood right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. It's brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Coach Collins and the Cats return to the new Welsh Ryan Arena on Friday as they host Binghamton. Get there early as ESPN's Pardon the Interruption will be taping live from 3:15 to 4:15. For more information, go to nusports.com/PTI, nusports.com/PTI. The gimmick with that is that Tony Kornheiser went to Binghamton, and Michael Wilbon, of course, proud Wildcat. So that's why that works. So that's a great opportunity, because I don't think they do live television tapings. Usually it's just in the studio in D.C., so that's pretty cool. 3:15 to 4:15. Go check them out on Friday at the new Welsh Ryan Arena. That should be fun. Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, and everything else in between. PTI, by the way, my favorite television show on ESPN still. There's been a lot of shows on the network, but PTI is still the best. Anchorage, Alaska. A commercial fisherman who faked his death to avoid incarceration. I've never been arrested, so it's hard for me to pronounce that word.
I feel you, man.
I'm one of the few.
Yeah, no, I'm here.
A commercial fisherman who faked his death to avoid incarceration for a sexual assault has been sentenced to 2.5 years in prison. federal prosecutors say that the Coast Guard spent $384,000 searching for 35-year-old Ryan Meganek after his girlfriend, who was part of the scheme, reported him missing off of Port Graham. Meganek, in 2016, faced charges of sexually assaulting a woman without a head? Wow. Investigators determined he swamped his skiff, returned to Port Graham on another boat, and hid out near his mother's home. He planned to flee Alaska when the search ended. Oh, man. The plan went awry when his girlfriend confessed to his grieving parents that Meganek was not dead. Alaska man sentenced for faking his own death to avoid a prison term. That's amazing.
Disturbing at the same time, too.
Wow.
Crazy.
Wow. All right. Let's move on to a naked man in Florida. So you lighten the room. Naked Florida man revealed on video sneaking into restaurant and munching on ramen. That's a real headline, folks. Naked Florida man revealed on video sneaking into restaurant and munching on ramen. Turn the page. St. Petersburg, Florida. It all started with chicken wings, a beer, and a burglar. There it is. It went downhill from there. A St. Petersburg police officer was investigated a November 6th break-in at the Chataway restaurant, reviewing surveillance video that shows that the burglar devouring a plate of chicken wings and enjoying a beer inside the kitchen. But then the officer stumbled across another incident from the night before. The video shows a man riding his bike up to the restaurant, pedaling around the parking lot for 10 minutes, then slipping in through the back gate. After wandering around for a bit, he opens the door to a shed for storing odds and ends and removes them one by one. Then the man gains access to the restaurant bathroom and exits without his clothes. He proceeds to sit naked at one of the restaurant's picnic tables and digs into the meal he brought with him. It was the ramen noodles. The video also shows him playing the bongos, also naked.
Well, the most important part is what flavor ramen noodles is he eating?
Really?
That's important.
Out of all that, really?
Yeah, absolutely.
All that description, all that time I spent, that 3 minutes I spent.
Really?
You're concerned about the type of noodle?
Stop.
You're concerned about the flavored noodles after I told you a man with bongos sat naked, took stuff out of the shed, revealed his clothes, took off his clothes. Are you concerned about whether or not it was spicy or not?
Was it worth it, Jonathan? That's what I wanted.
No, you want to know what flavor ramen it was, and that's weird. Which also tells me you'd be interested. You'd do that too. Clearly.
Nah.
What flavor ramen was it, bro? No.
It's the picante.
It's ridiculous. You heard this, folks. About the whole story, Felix Reyes wants to know what type of ramen it was. That's my staff. Felix Reyes. All right, guys.
All right, with that, we'll transition to a birthday cake. Birthday cakes are very important for birthdays, obviously, right? So you got to get that right. So a pathetic frog birthday cake from a supermarket leaves parents mortified, and it was a disgrace. Parents in Australia were left outraged after they picked up a cake for their son's frog-themed birthday party and saw one of the decorators' unusual interpretation of the amphibian. Shane Halford, who's 43, said he ordered the $49, which is for U.S. $35, cake at Woolworths in an Australian supermarket chain 3 days prior to the event.
Is the Woolworths in Australia?
Yes, sir.
Really? You got five and dime in Australia. That's interesting. Go ahead.
They told me it could be done, no worries at all. He wrote down everything I said and it said it would be ready by Sunday morning. I was very excited to see it, Shane said. Shane and his wife, Amy, were excited about celebrating their son's Mason's third birthday party and were looking forward to seeing the cake. A cake is an integral part of a child's birthday party. You want a nice one so you're able to remember and take photos, as they said, right?
Right.
So in preparation for his son's Mason's third birthday, they went out, they grabbed the cake, And since they were in a rush, they didn't bother checking to see if the cake was good. Mm-hmm. Like, they just expected 3 days prior, this cake should be ready and should be good. When the couple opened up the cake, they saw a minimalist green happy face and a number 3. And when they say that, it's legit. Like, a smiley face that you draw out and just the number 3 on a green frosted cake. That is their frog-themed birthday.
That's awful.
And spent $45 Australian for it. Said that he was angry. He went, called back the supermarket, told them how disgusted he was. He ordered it 3 days before it. So what they had to do was, to save their son's birthday party, they had to go out to another cake decorator that they knew, and they managed to fix the exact cake they had.
Yeah.
So they threw like little, it looks like little sprinkles and little cookie like chips and stuff, mm-hmm. and they made it look like a little road. And then they put the frog in it, and then they just put blue frosted color on the other end to make it look like water. And that's how they saved the cake.
So all's well that ends well.
All is well ends well, but a supermarket, it just tells you how sometimes you depend so highly on other people, and then when you go and check, they let you down.
That's because you don't have grandmamas anymore that know how to cook.
Or bake. Yeah, exactly.
Or bake.
That's important.
Or grandfathers that don't know how to cook or bake anymore. Doesn't help when grandpa is 50. You want somebody that knows, that has put their hand, I guess, metaphorically, put their hand in the dirt. In this case, put their hand into the cake, in the cake batter, that understands how to do it.
It's horrible. The picture is worse. I got to show you this after.
Just saying. Sean Davis.
Perfect segue, Hood. God made dirt. So dirt don't hurt. We heard that as kids, right?
Yeah.
You might have said that a couple of times with some penny candy, right, that we dropped on the ground?
Yes.
Well, we know that the creator of Marvel Universe, Stan Lee, passed yesterday at the age of 95.
Right.
His daughter did an interview with TMZ today and said that she created one last character with her dad before he passed away.
I've been trying to get him to do a character with me my entire life. He did listen to me. And we have been working on a character called Dirt Man.
Dirt Man? And, oh, what's that? Tell us about that.
The last little angel that we've got tucked away is Dirt Man. And I said, Daddy, please, no clatter, no steel, no any of that. Let's get down and dirty. Let's do what's going on and about love. Let's do Dirt Man. And it is very interesting. It's not over yet. We still have a little trickery.
Where is the project right now? Is this going to be made into a movie?
I hope so.
Dirt Man.
Coming to theaters near you, Marvel Universe. Dirt Man might save the Avengers and the rest of Marvel Universe in this next battle.
Put this on the poll at ESPN 1000. What would be a better character? Dirtman? Or Dirt Man.
Like, can you disintegrate Dirt Man like everybody else?
I want to know if Dirt Man works. Dirt Man from Evanston. I want to know if Charlie Dirtman, does he have like a nice suit and a briefcase, a haberdasher? He has a nice little briefcase. He says, good to see you. How are you? Good to see you. What is Dirt Man? Is Dirt Man, is that a person or a character? What would be better? Dirt Man for Marvel or Dirtman? I think Joe Dirtman would be better. What is the superpower of Dirt Man? What would you think is the best superpower of Dirt Man?
She said it was going to be about love. So I'm thinking, wait a minute, I think the superpower is to,
yes?
I don't know. Single touch help people overcome their fears with a touch of love.
Yeah, that
it's not working for me.
No, it's
but
not.
I'm just going based upon what J.C. Lee said.
That's fine. Somebody was smoking something, though. I mean, that makes no sense.
From your hood to J hood.
I excel, then prevail. The mic is contacted. I attract clientele.
On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Who knows?